Welcome, everybody, to another Misadventuring podcast. I'm Brent Miller, and here is your host, Carla King.
Hi. Thank you, Brent. Yes. Welcome to the Misadventuring show.
Carla, who's on the program today?
Oh, you're not going to believe this. Today's guest moved from a perfectly comfortable house in the suburbs onto a boat in the San Francisco Bay with her husband and two small children.
That sounds like a misadventure.
It is. I think it's a constant misadventure for her. We're going to find out. I really want to know how she made that leap.
Okay. That's going to sound great. All right. Well, when we come back, we will have our guest with us.
Great.
Hi, we're back, and now here's Carla to introduce her guest.
Thanks, Brent. Today, my guest is Live Aboard mom, Laureen Hudson. Laureen's a writer, a professional editor, a scuba instructor, a sailor, a traveler, a wife, and mother of two, soon to be three. In July of 2006, Laureen says that she and her husband woke up to find themselves garden variety, desk-driving, SUV-owning suburbanites. So they put their house up for sale and moved their young family of four onto a catamaran in the Emeryville Harbor. She chronicles their lives on her blog. Find it at theexcellentadventure.com. Welcome, Laureen.
Thanks, Carla.
So, I'm wondering, one day you woke up shocked to find yourself living the American dream in the suburbs of San Francisco, the San Francisco Bay Area. It is the American dream for most people, and for me, that sounds like a big leap. How is it that one day everything changed?
You know, in my first blog post, you know, to sort of introduce the thing, I stated it that way as sort of emotional and intellectual shortcut. I think Jason and I were both getting pretty dissatisfied over time. You know, it's sort of like the frog boiling. It really wasn't all that big a deal. It was a pretty easy move to make. It takes a little bit of time and negotiating. So our decision to stay here in the San Francisco Bay was largely related to the availability of work in the area. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I enjoy my paying job. It's, you know, as paying jobs go, it's really cool. But it is still a paying job, and I'm under no illusions about that.
Right. So you make a good living at a big company in Silicon Valley, and it involves writing and editing, and your blog is a very well-written chronicle of your life, and if you just look at theexcellentadventure.com, I see all kinds of subtopics that anyone can explore, like unschooling your children and things like that, that we won't go into here. I just want to know, you know, a lot of people are shocked to hear that you have toddlers living on a boat. All they can think of is, you know, baby overboard. So what are your thoughts on the safety issues and the environment that you're in now versus where you were in the suburbs? Like, you know, I'll ask the question I'm always asked. Aren't you scared?
You know, fear is such an amazing and powerful topic, and it actually touches on so many of the different decisions I've made in my life, which, again, we aren't going to go into here. But I really believe that American culture as a whole has been brainwashed, is such a strong word, but has been led to have a really poor ability to appropriately assess risk. One of the stories I tell about, you know, my nice suburban lifestyle is that, you know, I lived in this classic neighborhood with these, you know, beautiful World War II vintage homes and, you know, tree-lined streets. And, I mean, it was your total Cleaver neighborhood. And one day I was home alone with the boys when the police showed up at the door because a convict had escaped during transport, and they lost him. And he had been running through the backyards and had dodged into the house next door, which just happened to have been vacant. If that house hadn't been vacant, I and my two small children would have been alone with an extremely dangerous convict. It was sheer luck. he ended up in the house next door. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff doesn't happen on a boat. Pretty much the only thing on a boat you have to worry about is baby falling in the water. And, you know, as long as you take reasonable precautions and teach your kids to swim, it's no more challenging than teaching them not to run out into the street. So, you know, by my perception, what I've done is actually vastly safer than where I was.
Well, that's a really powerful story. I still, you know, do you have life jackets draped all over the boat? What precautions do you take? I'm sure that's probably a topic in your blog. But you do have a long history with boats and the water.
Yeah.
Right?
My first clear memory, my first period clear memory as a human being is I have this vision of my mother's face through water. When I was 8 months old, I flung myself into the family swimming pool, and I was having a great time. I know a lot of people are afraid of the water, and I know that colors a lot of people's perception of the risk involved with the boat. The boys have PFDs, personal flotation devices, you know, or life jackets. They know the rules. You know, inside the boat, they don't have to wear them. Inside the cockpit, they don't have to wear them. Outside the cockpit, or when we're underway, they do. The same thing is, you know, hold hands and look both ways before you cross the street. It's simply, you know, a different variation on the theme of safety. They understand that, you know, the water is wet and cold, and it's really just a matter of communicating with them. So I really haven't found it to be, you know, all that big a deal or all that onerous.
So it's not that restrictive, but still, one wonders what's it like living on a boat. I'm assuming that you're living in a much, much smaller space, and you don't have nearly as much room to put the clothes and the toys and the books that you had before. How much did you have to give up and pare down to live there?
Oh, my gosh. I could babble about this for ages. One of the things, one of my, you know, sort of personal philosophies is that people are owned by their stuff. You know, people look around and they go, oh my gosh, you know, I'd love to do that, but where would I put all my stuff? You know, or a lot of people I know are like, oh, but, you know, I couldn't get rid of my books, or, you know, which is all valid. Everybody's got their own value that they place on their belongings. I have one friend, she and her husband's biggest hobby is going antiquing, furniture shopping. So for them, you know, giving up their furniture would be like chopping off a limb. For me, getting rid of as much stuff as we had to get rid of, and which is funny because Jason and I always considered ourselves to be minimalists anyway. We had a sort of a pact from the time we first moved in together where every 3 months we'd go through and, you know, get rid of junk in a room. I'd get to go through his stuff and pick what needed to go, and he'd get to go through my stuff.
Oh, no. That sounds very dangerous.
Actually, it was awesome because if you know, you tend to be kind of blind to your own stuff, you know, or you pass over stuff, you Teflon stuff. Someone else can look at your stuff and ask the hard questions. Like, are you sure you really wanted this? And you kind of go, gosh, you know what? I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, you know, out of here. So, I mean, we already had this very minimalist sort of ethic, and then we downsized to fit on the boat, and we were blown away at how much junk we still had. And the process of getting rid of stuff, of looking at our belongings, and of either assessing a value of them in order to sell them, or assessing, you know, someone who would benefit from this thing more than I would, almost became a spiritual practice, which I know sounds really funny, but
I don't know. I can see that right away.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
so not,
I can
I'm
because
not totally
it,
doing
you
crazy
know.
Talk.
No, I mean, it is. I think everybody does agree, no matter what kind of collectors they are, that paring down and getting rid of things is cleansing somehow. It feels good for me.
It really does. And, you know, it's like you look at your closet and you go, you know, how many pairs of jeans does one human being really need? And the other really awesome thing. thing about doing that paring down. You know, one, you cut down, like I said, as a spiritual practice. But two, you cut down, it's kind of funny that the sort of boat we own, we're in a catamaran, which is, two hulls with the deck over the top. Because of the way they're designed, you can put far more stuff in a catamaran than it should carry. And you have to keep an eye on the waterline to see how heavy your boat is and how deep it sinks. And that impacts how well the boat sails.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny because we had the boat balanced. At one point when we were in the process of moving in, it was a beautiful day to go sailing. So we brought our truckload of junk, heaved it into one of the lockers, cut the ties and took off to go, do a quick sail around the bay. And our sailing was just, it was lodgy and awful. And we realized that it was all this junk in the front locker. And suddenly the stuff in the front locker that we had, sorted, culled, and decided we needed and hauled down the dock and stowed in the locker became annoying junk interfering with our sailing. And
poof, it's gone.
Poof, gone.
So you described the boat, two hulls with a deck over the top. And inside, are there like two, three rooms? Do you all live in one big room? Can you describe the situation?
One of my favorite things to explain, because most people's experience of sailing is in monohulls, which are, your classic image of a boat, one big hull, one deck on top. And historically, cultures that moved stuff, mercantilist cultures like, England and Spain and, the armadas and the gold fleets and all that, cultures that move stuff tend towards monohulls. Cultures that move people, the Polynesians, the Micronesians, the Melanesians, they all use multi-hulls. So I kind of, try to tell people that to sort of set the scene for this is far more comfortable a way to live than it sounds like it would when you first mention it. We actually have, the boat is 26 feet wide and 47 feet long, which ends up giving us more living space than your average student apartment. We've got three bedrooms, two bathrooms, a galley, and a workshop, and a salon living area.
Nice.
So we've actually got just a ridiculously huge amount of living space.
Wow. That's a lot of room.
It really is. It really is.
Well, okay. So did you and your husband both have this same dream, or did one of you have to convince the other that this was the right thing to do?
I am blessed. I mean, there's really no other way to put it, in that I have a partner with whom I am wired in parallel. We are extremely fortunate in that generally, if one of us comes up with an idea, the other one kind of goes, wow, that's actually a really good idea. Let's roll with that. So when I'm going to digress a little bit here. When Jason and I first met, I had this huge trip planned, one of those classic, woman alone exploring the world kinds of things. I had 3 months of my life blocked off to go to Australia and Fiji and cruise around. I love Australia. I've been there a bunch of times. I know a lot of people there. It's a very powerful place for me. The deep Pacific is one of those places that calls to me pretty strongly. So I had this whole trip, this whole adventure planned out, and then I met Jason. And the first iteration was, well, you're really cool, but I've got this trip planned. Maybe I'll look you up when I get back. And then it was, wow, you're really cool, but I've got this huge trip planned. Can you watch my dog? And then, you're really cool, and I've got this huge trip planned. Do you want to come with me? And Jason had never, like most Americans, didn't have a passport, had never left the country, had zero feel for travel and adventure and this kind of drop everything and go for it because the opportunity's there kind of thing. And so we'd known each other for all of 2 months when I bought him a piece of luggage, showed him how to pack, and threw him on a plane to to Australia and Fiji. And I really recommend this as a strategy for people, because you don't really know who someone is until you've traveled with them.
Right.
And that really set the stage for, you know, the rest of our relationship. It's like, are you somebody who can cope with taking advantage of an opportunity when it happens to present itself?
You know, I could have used that piece of advice about 20 years ago, Lorraine.
Actually, the moment at which I knew that Jay would be a good partner for me was while we were in Fiji, they had a coup. The government was taken over at gunpoint. And there was martial law, and the airport closed, and, you know, all flights were canceled. And, you know, suddenly it went from being, you know, sweet, smiling people to, like, you know, jackbooted M16 carrying militarists walking the streets. You know, when a government falls, things get a little weird. And he handled it so completely beautifully. I was like, okay. Okay, you're a keeper. I keep you.
It sounds that way.
But the other thing about the whole, was this a mutual dream where you both, you know, people get really hung up on the idea of the one true dream, or, you know, the one true way to follow your dream or spend your life or whatever. This happens to be the cool thing we're doing now. And we'll keep doing it as long as it's fun. And if something else strikes us as being, you know, the next cool thing, then we'll move to that. You don't have to pick just one thing. You know, there's lots and lots and lots of options, and we're both real aware of that.
You know, that's a wonderful perspective. I think people who don't regularly get out and live little dreams between their corporate responsibilities, perhaps we sort of get into that one dream when we retire mentality, and we get very connected, get very married to that, and maybe the other partner doesn't really share that one, so there's no opportunity to switch off dreams, dreams.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Well, and we're also trained, we're enculturated, you know, you will go to school, you're not allowed any other dreams, and then you will go to a college.
Mm-hmm.
Transferring between colleges a lot is frowned upon, even though the experience of attending multiple institutions can be very, very enlightening. We want you to pick one college, and we want you to pick one major, and we want you to do that one thing.
Mm.
And then we want you to get one job that is your career in capital letters with a trademark at the end. And then once you've done that career, you know, and you've bought one house, and we expect you to live in that one house, then one day you'll retire. Oh, and then you get to pick one dream, because that's all the time you've got left.
Wow.
That?
You know, you've just described a model that so many of us live by and we don't really question. So thanks for questioning that. And, you know, my next question was going to be about your kids. Your lives are models of sort of non-compliance for your children, right? You will not comply to these rules. And I know a lot of people do like homeschooling and Montessori schooling, alternative schooling, and you're unschooling your kids. So how is that for your kids? Are they suffering some disadvantages now that you think there will be advantages later, or are they completely assimilated into the...
The advantages are so upfront. My favorite... this is why unschooling is the way to go story is when we were in the process of finding a boat we wanted to purchase, because, of course, you know, the kids were in on this adventure. We didn't just, you know, decree, you know, you will, you know, we are selling the house and you are living on a boat. You know, I mean, that would have been kind of bizarrely authoritarian for people like us to do to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Rowan was completely in on it from the get-go. I mean, he'd sit on Jason's lap and cruise the ads on Yacht World and, you know, go, ooh, I like that boat, or ooh, that boat's yucky, or, you know. I mean, he had input, so he had ownership in the process.
Okay. And how old is he?
He's five.
He's five, and when you moved on the boat, he was four.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So the shopping process was three and a half. Mm-hmm. But so we, you know, we finally found the boat we thought we wanted, and we flew to Puerto Rico to see it live and make sure it was really, you know, the boat we wanted. And right before we left for Puerto Rico, Rowan had been introduced to, of all the unbelievable things, Dora the Explorer.
Oh, my.
I know. And everyone
what luck.
Dora, you know, it's like Dora TV show, cartoon. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, you're letting your children watch television. What kind of a lousy mother are you? Blah, 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 whatever. So Rowan had been having fun with Dora. So we fly to Puerto Rico, and we are standing in line to get, you know, admitted to the country. And the man looking at our passports is counting in Spanish. And Rowan's eyes got huge, and he was like, Mama, that's like Dora. And I'm like, go for it, you know? So he starts trying to speak Spanish to this guy, who is immediately charmed, senseless, and, you know, welcomes us to Puerto Rico. And Rowan instantly starts trying to communicate, trying to pick up vocabulary, asking people to teach him what things are in Spanish. He's like, you know, Dora says it this way. I mean, really interacting with people, and he made that connection. Like, oh, I'm not just sitting in classes learning a language. Mm-hmm. If I go to this place, I can use what I'm learning. And because we had to go to Puerto Rico twice, to the first time to decide we wanted to buy the boat, and the second time to actually take ownership of the boat, he had these two fantastic, nearly immersion experiences. And he's like a complete demon for Spanish at this point. He can count to 100 and backwards in Spanish at this point because somebody in Puerto Rico thought that would be a fun thing to teach him.
Wow.
And it stuck. You know, do you find...
So these are real-life teaching experiences.
Exactly.
And so...
Exactly, and they stuck because they were real.
Right.
In his head that way.
Right. They're not just sitting in a classroom being tested. That's fabulous. Well, so now I'd just like to go to your tips, because I'm sure you have some very good tips for people who want to create a fabulously misadventurous lifestyle. Maybe not on a boat, but just in general. So do you have this ready for us?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. Life is short. Life is really short. When you were sort of asking me to, you know, prepare about this interview, one of the things you asked me about was fear. You know, why am I not afraid of this? Why do I not think this is a scary thing? And it took me 2 days of spinning on that one to think about it. My dad, my biological father, died when I was 11 of pancreatic cancer, and it was a 3-year horrific struggle. It was horrific, and I was with him for the entire thing. And I can say pretty definitively from my position, based on my experience, that doing stuff is not scary. Having regrets is terrifying. So that's my biggest tip. Life is short. Get going.
Life is short. Get going.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good tip. That was number 4, just for the record.
For the record, that was number 4.
What's your next best tip, Lorraine?
Unplug from the media, which is funny because I noticed that's something one of your first podcast guests also said.
Yeah, Lisa Alpine.
Yeah, Lisa said unplug, and I absolutely, absolutely support that. The media thrives on keeping us afraid of everything all the time, and the real world isn't like that. If I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me if I was afraid of sharks because of freaking Peter Benchley and Jaws,
mm-hmm.
or I had a dollar for every time someone asked me if I was afraid of the perfect storm, thank you, Sebastian Younger, I'd be a wealthy girl. Mm-hmm. And that's all people know about is, you know, there was this media buzz about this thing, and ooh, aren't you afraid of that? That's not experience. That's not life. That's not what's really going on in the world. And generally, people are really kind.
Right.
You know, even if you go into these places where the media tells you, ooh, I mean, I live, the Emeryville Marina is right at the base of Oakland, Oakland, California, and ooh, high murder rate, you know, blah, 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 fear, 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 scare, scare, scare. It's not like that. You know, you go there and you walk around on the streets, you talk to people and you smile and you chat about the weather, and it's far cooler than the media would lead you to believe. So unplug. Don't let them
unplug. Great. That's a good tip. Okay, number three.
Number three. A phrase somebody gave me early on in my life. They can't eat you and they can't take away your birthday. We are so brainwashed to think that the consequences of stepping out of line are terrible, when in fact, usually what you're risking is somebody's disapproval. Right? Whatever. Go ahead, disapprove of me, whatever. Again, I think it's probably a function of schooling. We're trained, you know, be in your seat when the bell rings, or there will be consequences. And that message gets pounded into your head, you know, what, 7 times a day, every single day, for 12 years of your life, you get this sort of back-of-your-brain fear of stepping out and just going in a completely different direction. And it's not based on anything other than this sort of brainwashing that, ooh, someone will disapprove, ooh, you'll get sent to the principal's office. No, you won't. No one cares.
So maybe that is just sort of to step back and evaluate your fear and go, okay, is this fear, is it based in reality, or is it because somebody might be mad at me or disapprove of me or think less of me?
It's amazing how many people have said to me, oh, I could, whether it's about the boat thing or, you know, various other sort of adventures I've had, people are, you know, aren't you afraid of that? Wasn't that scary? Like, well, what exactly do you think would have been scary about it?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't actually come up with anything. You know, there's just this sort of low level, you know, I don't know, it's just different.
Fear of disapproval.
Yeah.
We all want to fit in with our peer group and our society, so I think that you're helping us bend that notion of what that is, Laureen. Yeah, and I'm going to read more. I subscribe to your blog at theexcellentadventure.com, where you have a lot more to offer there. And I appreciate those tips, and it's been great. Thanks for joining us. And
thanks so much, Carla. It was fun.
Yeah. So thanks, Lorraine.
All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Wasn't that just absolutely fascinating?
She is a fascinating person. She's a dynamo in person, too. And I'm glad to know her. And her tips are great. And her other two tips are good, too. So those are going to be on misadventuring.com as soon as this podcast is posted.
Yep. Do you do much sailing?
You know, I took sailing classes when I was going to school at UC Santa Cruz, and I managed to dump the boat over a few times. I'm much more of a kayaker, but I enjoy sailing around the bay when I'm invited.
Yes, well, living on a sailboat, that'd be great. Hey, Carla, who's up next?
Hey, you know, we have, of course, another misbehaving misadventurer. It's a man named Mark McMahon, who drove a truck from his home in Tucson all the way down to Terra del Fuego.
Wow.
It's a long, long way, as you know.
Yeah, normally you hear people riding motorcycles that far, but he drove a truck.
He drove a truck. Much more practical guy, isn't he?
Probably had more to haul.
He had more to haul, but, you know, not only that, he figured out how to do business from the road. He thought, okay, this is my life. I'm going to do business for the road. And he actually started a business called The Portable Professional that helps people who want to do business from the road do business from the road. So he's going to have a lot of very practical tips that have to do with electronics and gadgets and all, you name it. So we'll look forward to talking with him.
That sounds like a great one.
It is. So, until next time, this is Carla King wishing that all your misadventures have happy endings.